What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Obama meets Monday with his Cuban counterpart, Raul Castro, after arriving in Cuba Sunday, the first sitting U.S. president to do so in 90 years. He restored diplomatic relations with Cuba last year after a 55-year break. Mr. Obama was greeted by Cuba's foreign minister, Bruno Rodriguez. Aside from a walking tour of Old Havana, he met with U.S. Embassy staff.
Everything we've accomplished so far, more Americans coming to Cuba, more engagement with the Cuban people, civil society, faith groups, entrepreneurs, students, young people, more opportunities for the Cuban people to improve their lives. It's all happening because of you. Every single day, you're bringing the Cuban people and the American people closer together.
Mr. Obama is also to meet with members of Cuba's civil society, Cuban entrepreneurs, and deliver an address to the Cuban people during a historic three-day visit. As he arrived, security officials arrested dozens of opposition demonstrators opposed to the Castro government. More than 50 were detained, including the leader of the opposition group Ladies in White, Berta Soler. She said they were gathered to exercise their rights, including the right of protest. Cuba recently released some political prisoners and has taken small steps to open up internet access. The Democratic Republic of Congo is extraditing one of the most wanted suspects in the Rwandan genocide to face charges for his crimes. Ladislas Ntaganzwa was arrested in eastern Congo last year, transferred into UN custody early Sunday before being sent to the Rwandan capital, Kigali. He's expected to be tried on 9 counts of genocide, crimes against humanity, and violations of the Geneva Conventions. 800,000 Tutsis and politically moderated Hutus were killed in the 1994 genocide. This is VOA News. Hundreds of mostly Syrian migrants fleeing 5 years of war continue to make land in Greece Sunday, arriving on Greek islands in flimsy boats despite an international deal to send migrants back to Turkey.
I'm coming here. I want to go to Denmark and complete my study. I work very, very hard work in Turkey. I collect the money for I come here. Coming here. After that, I come here 5 days. I go back to Turkey. It's very, very dangerous and very, very not good.
Under the European Union agreement reached Friday with Ankara, all migrants, including Syrians arriving in Greece by sea from Turkey after March 20, are to be returned once they are registered and their asylum claims processed. It also requires Ankara, which already hosts more than 2.5 million Syrian refugees, to step up domestic efforts to crack down on illegal migration. It promised $6.6 billion in EU aid to deal with the existing crisis in Turkey. Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei says the U.S. has failed to fully honor a nuclear agreement that lifts sanctions on Iran. He says many international companies continue to shy away from business with Tehran out of fear of U.S. reprisal. The Iranian spiritual leader says U.S. sanctions inhibit big companies and banks from dealing with his country. This is, in his words, sheer enmity. His comments came in an address marking the Persian New Year. The nuclear deal took effect in January, creating widespread expectations in Iran of economic recovery. At least 13 were killed Sunday when a bus carrying foreign students crashed on a Spanish highway between the cities of Barcelona and Valencia. At least 34 passengers were injured. Cape Verde's main opposition party has reportedly won an absolute majority in Sunday's election, ousting the ruling African Party for the independence of Cape Verde for the first time in 15 years. The French press agency says with most votes counted, the opposition MPD stands to gain 36 seats in parliament, to 25 for the ruling party. Senegalese voters went to the polls Sunday in a referendum on reducing the presidential term to 5 years from the current 7. The constitutional reform advanced by President Macky Sall would also limit the age of candidates to 75 and allow independents to run. Voters in the semi-autonomous archipelago of Zanzibar went to the polls Sunday in a rerun of disputed October elections, annulled over fraud allegations by the electoral authority after the main opposition Civic United Front claimed victory. And voters in Benin have reportedly backed businessman Patrice Talon in the presidential runoff against outgoing President Thomas Boni Yayi's handpicked successor, Prime Minister Lionel Zinsou. I'm Victor
Beatty. That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, the 21st day of March, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Votes are being counted in Sunday's Zanzibar presidential election, boycotted by some opposition parties.
The Democratic election was on the 5th of October. Today is the election which is to keep CCM in power. It is not a democratic election. It is a possible election.
Nasser Ahmed Mazrui is the Deputy Secretary of the Opposition Civil United Front of Zanzibar. Cameroon's military said it frees Central African Republic rebel hostages. And Uganda's opposition leader Kizza Besigye makes 1 month under house arrest.
Under Section 24 of the Police Act, we are empowered to undertake preventive arrangements where we have reasonable belief that the unrestricted movement of a person can basically lead to further injury, risk of peril, loss to the wider public.
Fred Enega is spokesman for the Ugandan police. South Sudan traditional and religious leaders call for speedy implementation of the peace agreement. And U.S. President Barack Obama begins his historic visit to Cuba. Those stories, plus Mark Omar's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Vote counting is underway in Zanzibar's rerun election to choose the semi-autonomous island's president and members of the House of Representatives. Zanzibar President Ali Mohamed Shein is seeking another five-year term under the ticket of the ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi Party, or the CCM. The Electoral Commission annulled the October 25th election on grounds they were marred by several irregularities and set March 20th for the rerun. But some key opposition parties, including the Civil United Front or the CUF, boycotted Sunday's vote. Nasser Ahmed Mazrui, Deputy Secretary of the CUF, says the Electoral Commission canceled the October 25th election because the ruling party candidate lost.
The election of 25th October 2015 was free and fair, transparent and credible election. Very unfortunate when the CCM realized that they are losing. The chairman himself only nullified the whole election. It was not according to the laws of Zanzibar. Therefore, in supporting this election, it means we are legitimizing the mistake which the chairman has done by nullifying the election. So we have kept ourselves away from this election, and we have called upon all our followers to keep themselves calm in their house, not to come out for votes. All our followers and all our members, they didn't turn up for voting. That's why we found that in all stations, there were very, very few voters.
Mr. Mazrui, what do you say to people who say by you not taking part, you denied your supporters the right to participate in a democratic process that can empower them?
No, the democratic election was on the 25th of October. Today is an election which is to keep CCM in power. It is not a democratic election. It is a forcible election. No constitution, no clause in the constitution which gives the power to the chairman to unify the election. So in order to keep our constitution right, we have to boycott the election because it is not credible, it is not democratic, it is a forcible election.
Your party did not take part in the parliamentary election. Do you have members in parliament?
We are not going to be in the government, we are not going to be in the parliament, because the government which is going to be formed is not going to be credible then. So there is no need for us to participate in this government, which is not credible at all.
Because you did not take part, the vice president or the president of Zanzibar will be elected, the parliament will be elected, and you will be forced to respect the laws that they pass.
We are not going to respect the government, which is not legitimate government. We will oppose the government, we are not going to support them. But we're not going to break any law. We know that we have to keep ourselves to safeguard the laws of Zanzibar or to safeguard the constitution of Zanzibar. That's why we didn't participate in today's election. So we are going to do our politics, but not breaking any law.
Nasser Ahmed Mazrui is Deputy Secretary of the Opposition Civil United Front Party of Zanzibar. He was speaking with me from the capital, Zanzibar City. Voters went to the polls Sunday in Congo-Brazzaville in an election that many say is expected to lead to the re-election of longtime leader Denis Sassou Nguesso in power for 32 years. On the eve of the vote, the government ordered telecom providers to block all service during Sunday's vote. Congo's interior minister sent a letter to the country's two main telecom firms saying that for reasons of national security, they are to block all communication, including text messages, on both Sunday and Monday. It has been a month since Ugandan police placed opposition leader Kizza Besigye under house arrest following that country's February 18 presidential election. Besigye has been arrested many times whenever he tries to leave his house, but he has said he is mentally prepared to make what he called the necessary sacrifice for the liberation of Uganda. Dr. Besigye has also asked the court to declare the siege of his house illegal and damages awarded for the inconvenience and mental anguish it has caused him. The U.S. and European Union have both called for Besigye's immediate release, but Ugandan police spokesman Fred Enega says Dr. Besigye is being held under Section 24 of the Police Act, which empowers the police to carry out a preventive arrest and detention.
You could be aware or not of the circumstances that led to police enforcing the preventive action under Section 24 of the Police Act, where under that section we are empowered and, of course, obligated to undertake preventive arrangements where we have reasonable belief that the unrestricted movement of a person, an individual or a group of persons, can basically lead to further injury, risk of peril, loss to the wider public, as well as obstruction to traffic flow on the major highways. Of course, this was something that we got based on our credible sources of intelligence of the Plan B, our following the laws in the most recent presidential election. So the situation is under control, and we are now monitoring and also awaiting the outcome from the High Court. The lawyers have actually filed two complaints, presumably with the same fact that is in the higher court, as well as in the lower magistrate's court. So we are awaiting the outcome, and we shall go by whatever judgment is made by the court.
You described the situation as preventive, but it's been 1 month since the elections were over. Do you still believe that this is preventive?
Yeah, it's actually preventive, yes, based on the threats that could arise from the unrestricted movement of the individual in research, kind of Kizza Besigye. That is one area of enforcement that we have in our police laws, that's the Police Act. It could be different in your country, but we base ourselves on that.
Do you believe it's legal to hold somebody under house arrest like that without charges?
Probably you could take time to study the Police Act, the Ugandan Police Act, and then you look at our Section 24, to be specific, all right? And if at all we are there unlawfully, it is for the court to interpret that based on the facts on the ground.
Dr. Besigye has gone to court because I think he's claiming damages and all that. Is that true?
Yeah, that is absolutely true. And based on the presentations before our court, we shall await the outcome from court. That's a lawful procedure.
In the meantime, can someone go to visit him? Can he get visitors?
We have enabled several visitors to his place. Then there are actually those ones that where we have information that their visit is not helpful to the situation we are trying to bring under control, where they actually more of persons with insightful messages and so on. Sometimes we do allow, sometimes we don't, based on the intelligence we have on ground, on the intentions, on the motivations of those who are actually going to visit him.
Fred Anega is the spokesman for the Ugandan police. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. Today is Monday, March 21st, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's send a shout-out to listeners on our affiliate station, Kira FM, in Jinja, Uganda, Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu, Kenya, and Radio Hot Cocoa in Bamenda, Cameroon. Daybreak Africa time, 15 minutes past the hour. Cameroon's military has freed 12 people held hostage by 30 suspected rebels on its border with the troubled Central African Republic. As Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon's military says two of the suspected rebels were killed and several of its soldiers wounded in a 48-hour operation.
The governor of the Adamawa region of Cameroon says the 12 people, including children, were freed from captivity after Cameroon military launched an operation on its border with the Central African Republic. Kildadi Tagyoke Bukar says, unfortunately, some of the hostage takers escaped to the neighboring country. He says the assailants were quickly detected by the population and Cameroon military because they were dressed in foreign military uniforms, an indication many rebels and evildoers from foreign countries were still operating on Cameroonian territory. Among the freed hostages flown by Cameroon's military from the border zone to the Ngaoundéré Airport in Adamawa region is 47-year-old cattle rancher Mohamedou Diopdi, who says he spent 2 weeks in captivity after he was seized with his two children from his home at Ngawi.
À 23h, ils ont coincé la porte. Je demande c'est qui. Il dit que ah, c'est personne, c'est Monsieur Ousmane.
He says the day he was kidnapped, there was a loud knock on his door about 11 p.m. with voices threatening that if he refused to let them in, he and his family would be killed. He says when he opened the door, some masked people dressed in black and armed with guns ordered his household to follow them. Diopdi says while in captivity on the mountainous border zone, they were asked to pay ransoms of up to $10,000 each for their release. He says they were beaten each morning and fed with meat from stolen cattle. Colonel Asulai Blama, who led the operation to free the hostages, has called for civilians to report suspects and strange people in their localities. He says Cameroon's military is determined to fight the attackers, but the battle cannot be won without the participation of the general population.
Je veux saluer ici la détermination et la bravoure des hommes qui sont partis sur le terrain.
He says he is very thankful to the population, especially farmers and cattle ranchers, who collaborated by giving useful information to the military. He says without such collaboration, the armed men who operate on border localities should have retreated to the Central African Republic. Before 2014, CAR rebels were attacking Cameroon frequently to press for the release of Abdoulaye Miskine and 10 anti-Balaka soldiers who were arrested in Cameroon in 2013. Cameroon and CAR negotiated the repatriation of Miskine to an undisclosed location and the attacks reduced. But since May 2015, Cameroon has been complaining that suspected CAR rebels were attacking its territory, kidnapping cattle ranchers and rich business persons and asking for ransoms. Cameroon shares a 900-kilometer-long boundary with the landlocked Central African Republic, and there are 300,000 CAR refugees in Cameroon. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Traditional and religious leaders in South Sudan have called on President Salva Kiir and First Vice President-designate and former rebel leader Riek Machar to stop delaying and start implementing last August peace agreement. The leaders say civilians are still being killed, displaced from their villages and forced to go hungry because of the ongoing violence. Wakil Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
More than 50 traditional and religious leaders who attended a three-day workshop in Juba say they want to see concrete steps being taken towards implementing the peace agreement. The workshop was sponsored by the United States Agency for International Development to educate leaders on the terms of the deal. At the end of the workshop, last night, Secretary General of the South Sudan Council of Churches, James Oyet, read a statement on behalf of the leaders.
We, the people of Greater Upper Nile Region, are tired and have suffered enough as a result of this senseless war. And we call upon His Excellency Salva Kiir Mayardit and his first vice president, Dr. Riek Machar, to show their concern in the implementation of the peace agreement and expedite the formation of a transitional government of national unity.
Oyet says traditional and religious leaders are asking other countries to come and help South Sudanese who continue to suffer.
We call upon the international community to continue to stand with the people of South Sudan in general, and in particular with the people of Greater Upper Nile, who are suffering displacement, hunger, loss of lives, and destruction of property as a result of the current conflict.
The workshop included women from the Greater Upper Nile region's former states of Jonglei, Unity, and Upper Nile. Lauren Bailey is from the USAID-funded project called the Systems to Uphold the Credibility and Constitutionality of Elections in South Sudan. She says citizens know very little about the content of the peace agreement.
One of the things that we've been hearing in a lot of our work is that citizens know less about the peace agreement than they should to really understand and follow the process. And so the goal is to take chiefs and faith-based leaders who are very well respected in their communities and to engage them on the peace agreement so they can go back and have those same conversations with their constituents and their communities.
This was the third workshop of its kind. Similar ones were held in the Greater Bahr El Ghazal and Equatorial regions. The trainees are expected to conduct similar workshops in their communities. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
U.S. President Barack Obama has begun a history-making trip to Cuba that would have been unthinkable before last year. As VOA's Michael Bowman reports, the trip will be closely watched around the world, including in Washington, where opinions differ on the wisdom and value of the visit that will shape Obama's legacy on the world stage.
An instantly iconic moment. Barack Obama became the first sitting U.S. president to visit Cuba in nearly 90 years. Palpable excitement in Havana.
A historic day. Many years since a U.S. president came to Cuba.
I think there will be many positive changes, improvements for Cuba's economy, tourism, and the ability to enter and leave the country.
Obama will meet with ordinary Cubans, catch an exhibition baseball game, and address the Cuban people in a televised speech.
He's highly popular in the country, and people will be listening very closely to what he has to say.
James Kaysen headed the U.S. interest section in Havana during the George W. Bush administration.
He needs to be able to speak to the Cuban people, calling for free elections, calling for a more liberal economic system which will bring prosperity.
The White House says Obama will speak out.
And he is going to sit down with the leader of Cuba and say, you need to do a better job of protecting the human rights of your people.
In our relations with the United States, there can be no negotiations on internal changes in Cuba that are and will remain strictly a sovereign matter for our people.
The Cuban government has its own agenda.
If the U.S. government really wants to help the people of Cuba, like it says, then it has to lift the embargo.
The decades-old U.S. economic embargo is one thing Obama cannot end by himself.
Our trade embargo on Castro's Cuba, passed by Congress in 1959, is still, in fact, intact and enforceable. Despite the president's attempt to undermine this embargo by executive action, he is ultimately bound by it. That is the law of the land.
Beyond the rich symbolism, observers differ on the trip's ultimate impact.
It is the definitive turning of the page away from the Cold War and policies of isolation and hostilities and embargoes toward a new era of engagement, constructive engagement.
My view is that no policy will work while the Castros are alive. I've always said the only solution is the biological solution when they're dead.
Obama is to meet with President Raul Castro, not former leader Fidel Castro. No one doubts the trip is solidifying America's opening with Cuba, but where that leads, no one can say for sure. Michael Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. Burundi's Francine Nyonsaba won the women's 800 meters at the World Indoor Championships in Portland, Oregon State, in the United States of America on Sunday. What's more, her winning time of 2 minutes and 00.01 seconds is the world's quickest indoor time in the event this year. Kenya and Margaret Wambui clinched the bronze medal. Meanwhile, Ethiopians Yomif Kejelcha and Genzebe Dibaba triumphed in the men's and women's 3,000 meters in 7 minutes and 57.21 seconds and 8 minutes and 47.43 seconds, respectively. Ethiopian Meseret Tefa was runner-up in the women's race, while Kenyan Augustine Kiprono Choge was third in the men's contest. Early on Saturday, Burundi's Antoine Gakeme clocked 1 minute and 46.65 seconds to clinch the silver medal in the men's 800 meters. Dawit Seyaum led Gudef Tsegei and Aksumawit Embai in a second, third, and fourth place finish in women's 1500 meters, while Nigeria placed fourth and fifth in women's and men's 4x400-meter relays, respectively. Staying in Portland, at the end of the four-day event on Sunday, the hosts, United States of America, are runaway winners with 13 gold, 6 silver, and 6 bronze medals. Ethiopia is a distant second with 2 gold, 2 silver, and 1 bronze medal. Burundi is fifth, while Kenya is 25th out of 29 countries on the medal table. Football hosts Zimbabwe and Tanzania drew 1-1 in the return leg of their Africa Women's Cup of Nations qualifier in Harare on Sunday. Consequently, Zimbabwe progressed on a 3-2 aggregate. Early on Saturday, Tunisia outplayed visitors Burkina Faso 2-0 on aggregate. Botswana dismissed Mauritius 11-0. Mali edged Morocco 2-1, while Senegal pipped Guinea 4-2 in a post-match penalty shootout in Conakry after the two sides were deadlocked at one goal apiece on aggregate. On Friday, hosts Namibia and Zambia drew 2-2 in Windhoek. Zambia carried the day on a 5-3 aggregate. In hockey news, South Africa outclassed hosts Namibia 12-0 as Egypt overwhelmed Tanzania 28-0 in the men's contest at the Africa Junior Hockey Championships in Windhoek, Namibia on Sunday. Early on Saturday, Namibia beat Zimbabwe 3-1 as South Africa dismissed Botswana 39-0 in women's matches, while on Friday, Zimbabwe beat Tanzania 10-1 and Egypt outclassed Namibia 8-0 in men's action as Zimbabwe mauled Tanzania 18-0 in a women's encounter. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Monday morning, March 21st.
The manner of bloodletting witnessed in Saturday's run elections in Rivers State of Nigeria is unprecedented and uncalled for, and should, as a matter of urgency, be investigated to find out exactly what transpired. That region should not make themselves another not it in the making. Enough of this pipeline standardization, kidnapping, cultism, and other vices. I am Okechukwu Ajaka of Ezebisa Family, on the Kingdom, and
we thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. And that's it for this Monday, March 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte, Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
Hi, this is Larry London, host of VOA's Border Crossings Music Show. We have special guests this week, and I invite you to join us. On Tuesday, it's Australian Conrad Sewell. Then on Wednesday, we have Jesse Clegg. So please tune in and visit Border Crossings program page at www.voanews.com for broadcasting hours.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
Stand up! Stand up!
Starting Monday, your favorite sports show is expanding to half an hour a day, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT, right here on VOA Africa.
We will rock you.
Tune in. You'll be glad you did. You did.